This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Accelerate your day with today's business headlines with Volvo Cars.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Melissa Idris with the top business stories of the day. But before we get to them, just a quick reminder that after the 8 o'clock bulletin, we have the Breakfast Grill. And our guest this morning is Lam Swee Kim. She's the Chief Marketing Officer of Dim Sum. And Joyce Goh is going to be speaking to her.
Yeah, that's not breakfast, but it is an online streaming platform from Star Media Group. It was launched about... Did I disappoint you, Han?
Yeah, well, you know, because it is great. I mean, it's a great breakfast.
It is Dim Sum on the Breakfast Grill, right? Ah. So it's Dim Sum launched nearly 2 years ago. I think it was in November 2016. They offer Asian content exclusively. And it is really quite interesting to take a look at the their specific OTT business model, because you know, if you are an over-the-top player, then you can either charge pay-per-view, or you can have advertising revenue, or you can have a subscription model, which is somewhat similar to what Netflix uses. And that's the one that Dim Sum is using. But whether that will be enough to sustain going forward, I think it will be an interesting conversation that Joyce will have.
Yeah, I mean, because it's a very crowded space, right? Dim Sum is competing along with Siu Mai. No, that's a terrible joke. I'm sorry.
Siu Mai is part of the Dim Sum.
I know. Sorry, okay. Anyways,
competing Roti Canai.
Yeah, there we go. Look, Dim Sum is competing against Tonton, Netflix, iFlix. Look, even iTunes is working on some video content. I was told that they're working, Apple's working with Oprah to come up with video content as well. Amazon, and obviously. So there are plenty of players trying to offer that same service. How is Dim Sum gonna stick out?
I've often said that Sharad Kutan is the Oprah Winfrey of Malaysia.
That's a very interesting...
Minus the hair?
Yeah.
And the charisma?
Okay, but I also think there's a very important question, and this is due to the group, right? The Star Media Group, because with its ownership of the newspaper, and also because we're hearing from industry sources about what is happening there. They're downsizing. There's a lot of talk about cuts. And also, how do they manage this new political landscape? In Star had loyalties, as it were, to the MCA in the past, and that affected, I guess, their editorial line now or going forward, because I don't expect this is going to be taken up this morning. But anyway, that is an issue that I would put out there. Now let's return to the story of Apple.
Yeah, so as we just heard in the conversation we had with Dodge Dolan, Apple reported third quarter results just a few hours ago. Now June results is typically its weakest period, right? But in its weakest period, it still announced what analysts are saying were good and strong results. So profit was up 32% year on year to 11.5 billion ringgit. Revenue up. Revenue is also a beat Wall Street consensus. I think 53 billion ringgit it came in. And what was also important to take a look at was the iPhone sales. So if you take a look at iPhone sales, it is still Apple's most important product. It's accounted for about 60% of its revenue. They sold 41.3 million phones, slightly lower than analyst projections, but still very good for what was considered to be a traditionally slow period.
Right. So even though the number of units iPhones sold was pretty much flat, 41.3 million, but they made more money from selling these iPhones because it was the iPhone 10. All right,
so I'm so glad you didn't say iPhone X.
iPhone 10. So their average selling price rose up nearly 20%. So they got about $724 per customer there.
Oh, just give you some local numbers. An iPhone 10 prices here for 64 gigabytes. It's about 4,800 ringgit, and for 256 gigs, it's about 5,500.
So top end and low end. Yeah,
that's a huge amount of money you put down on a phone, don't you think?
Yeah, it is, but you know there are numbers. People are still buying it, as evident in iPhone's results. Now, I think what's also interesting, if we were to reference again the conversation we had with Dodge, I mean, we should really be looking at Apple as a consumer products company. It is not no longer a tech giant, no longer a tech stock, that we should just be viewing this completely as just a tech counter. Therefore, the valuations would then be different as well, but rather to see it as a proxy to the consumer play, right?
Right, and because of also the rising importance of its services segment, so I think that's what's driving Dodge to say that, no, don't just look at Apple as a tech company, because you've got the
services.
That's iTunes, Apple Pay, right, iCloud, Apple Music, you know, etc. That revenue came in at $9.5 billion, and that was the segment's best performance ever for Apple. And you would think that moving forward, it's only going to grow. That segment has seen double-digit growth.
Yeah, I mean, look, Apple's Apple Music, I think coming from a low base, it grew over 50% year on year. Looking at their cloud services, also more than 50%. So really, I think they're smart to kind of not just bank on their iPhone sales, because while it is still their cash cow, they're saying, well, we want this services revenue, because it looks like people may not be replacing their phones as quickly as previously. Services is a recurring income for Apple, which is a very brilliant move on Tim Cook's
part. Yeah, I'm hoping my phone turns into a teenager very soon. I'm waiting for it to turn into a teenager before I get rid of it.
It's already as petulant, isn't it?
Yeah, very petulant.
Right, but, you know,
low bat. Well, always resting.
Mel, don't tell Tim Cook that, you know, because he's, they're expected to release 3 new phones before the year is up. So yeah, they're going to be banking on people wanting to trade in their teenage phones for new brand spanking babies.
Yeah, Sharad.
Apple babies. Yeah,
I don't know why you would start. You just keep carry on. Hope they earn some money for you.
What is also interesting is Apple could be inching closer to the $1 trillion mark. I mean, it's headed into the most important few quarters in the next half of the year. You've got the, as you mentioned, Han, the new iPhone releases. You've got the critical holiday quarter.
This has got to do with market cap, right? So it's $1 trillion US dollars of market cap, right?
Right now, I think it's about 921. I believe it hit $956 billion just after hours trading a few hours ago.
Is this an exclusive club, this $1 trillion club?
Well, this would make Apple, if it crosses that line first, would be the first US-based company to do so. Now, you've got the likes of Amazon as well. Now, they actually, their bid to become the first $1 trillion company, it took a bit of a bump when they declined by 0.1% overnight, and then on Monday's trade they declined by 2.1%. So their market cap is at $866 billion right now. But, you know, again, there's still plenty of room for either of these guys, Apple or Amazon, to make it there first.
And Jeff Bezos is still the richest man in the world?
Well, let me find out.
All right. While you're doing that, I'd like to kind of look at, compare and contrast Apple to Samsung's results. They just also announced their results, I think, yesterday, a couple of days ago. It posted the slowest quarterly profit growth in more than a year, and they're seeing sales of the Galaxy S9 smartphones really being hit by competition from cheaper Chinese-made phones. So Samsung, perhaps, I think, seeing more of a competition coming up from China than, say, Apple.
Right, so that's for the relationship between Samsung and China. But for Apple, coming back to Apple, they saw 19% growth in Greater China.
Really?
Yeah, over $9.5 billion coming from there. Look, China is going to be a very important market for Apple. To address your question there, Sharad, yes, you are correct. Jeff Bezos, according to the Bloomberg's Billionaires Index, still the world's richest man with a net worth of $147 billion. Bill Gates in second, Warren Buffett third, Zuckerberg down to sixth now, just below $69 billion.
Okay, speaking about China, let's move on to 1MDB. The Wall Street Journal has just posted another 1MDB story, reiterating the ties between 1MDB, the 9.4 billion ringgit Suria Strategic Energy Resources gas pipeline projects, and Ai-Itam Land out in Penang.
Penang, that's right. But, you know, this story has a twist, Sharad, because now the Wall Street Journal are revealing that Joe Lo has continued to be involved. Apparently, they, being the journal, spoke to a former Malaysian official who worked in the Prime Minister's office. he or she told them that Jolo played a central role in negotiating the pipeline deal. In fact, the source also said that in May of last year, as recently as May of last year, Jolo met with Dato' Sri Najib Razak on the sidelines of a Belt and Road Forum in Beijing. This was to discuss future infrastructure projects in China.
Yeah, is this the first time we've had a confirmation of a meeting between the former prime minister and Zhou Luo? I mean,
when you say confirmation, it's a Wall Street Journal article.
Yeah, I mean, according
to the source.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that seems to be the case, at least to the best of my knowledge here. So it looks like even post 1MDB, even despite all these allegations that we don't know where Zhou Luo is, well, it looks like as of May 2017, the former prime minister had no problems finding him. And again, according to this Wall Street Journal article, he is still pulling the strings and trying to make sure that these Chinese entities work with these Malaysian entities and perhaps even funnel money intended for these infrastructure projects back towards 1MDB.
So the Wall Street Journal also reports that the official said that Najib traveled to China regularly to meet with Zhou Luo.
Yeah.
So that's also quite a revelation. If it's true, it would be quite an astounding expose of the lack of transparency on the part of the former prime minister about his relationship with Zhou Luo. Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. Remember, we'll be back with the Breakfast Grill this morning. Our guest is Lam Swee Kim. She's the Chief Marketing Officer with Dim Sum. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Tan Chung Han with the top business stories of the day. And we start off with the Wall Street Journal. No, it's not a local Malaysian newspaper. It's an American one, just in case. It's posted another 1MDB story. These American newspapers constantly breaking stories on Malaysia. This story reiterates the ties between 1MDB, the Suria Strategic Energy Resources Gas Pipeline Project, and the Air Hitam land issue in Penang.
Yeah, what's new about this is there's a bit of a twist here, right? So the Wall Street Journal, they're revealing that Zhou Luo continues to be involved in the 1MDB saga. Apparently, they spoke to a former official who worked in the Prime Minister's office, and this source told them that Zhou Luo played a central role in negotiating that pipeline deal, as well as, I think, some other Malaysian China infrastructure projects. So according to this source, guys, in 2017, that's last year in May, Zhou Luo met with Dato' Sri Najib Razak on the sidelines of a forum in China. So this was the Belt and Road Forum in Beijing. Apparently, they had met as recent as last year to discuss these infrastructure projects. And the source also said that Najib would travel regularly to China to meet Zhou Luo.
Yeah, so it doesn't look like it was a one-off. Again, this is according to the Wall Street Journal. It looks like despite all the commentary about how there's this distance between the former prime minister and Zhou Luo, but according to this report here, it looks like he is very much there, very much actively involved, pulling the strings in trying to get this deal put together. And now, the reason we're talking about this deal is because the headline for this story actually reads, whereby Malaysia suspects, the current Malaysian government suspects that these Chinese companies had actually played a part in funneling that cash intended for those infrastructure projects instead towards 1MDB.
I wonder if at some point we'll actually have a confirmation that's not simply a source story.
A source, yeah.
Yeah, if the Wall Street Journal will be able to triangulate this information and get evidence of it.
But why this is important, Sharad, is the timeline, right? If we're talking about, just a year ago, that means this is after all the controversy has come to the fore. If it is in fact true that this source says, our former prime minister met with Zhou Luo a year ago in China, I think that changes the lens a little bit, because this is, everyone's looking for where he is and what's going on. So I think this is quite important, especially when we're looking at some of the funds being funneled or allegedly funneled from China, from the pipeline project into what is alleged to be one, alleged to be funneled into 1MDB.
Right. So 1MDB, you know, the story that keeps on giving. So we've got another 1MDB-related story, this time on the front page of the Edge Financial Daily. Their headline reads, Goldman linked 1MDB lawyer, a Swiss probe target. So this is a former top executive with the state-linked fund and also a senior lawyer at that fund who worked with Goldman Sachs. They are among six people targeted in the Swiss criminal probe.
Apparently, they're not named, Han, but yeah. They're just being identified with initials with T and L. This is like James Bond, just M and Q. So T and L being identified as per Swiss law. Apparently, L helped Goldman Sachs raise $6.5 billion for debt for 1MDB. And T had apparently worked with 1MDB up to 2011.
Well, you know, all I think you need to do is look at the organizational chart to find out who the T's and L's. Unless, of course, T stands for Tan Sri. In which case, we'll have a harder time. Okay. Well, maybe not. Maybe easier. Okay.
I also want to, just a quick, while we're talking about 1MDB, Sharad, sorry to interrupt you. There's been news that Putrajaya is now refusing to pay Arul Kanda what was promised to him. So if you remember, the former 1MDB chief, Arul Kanda, was offered 5 million ringgit as a salary package for 6 months. That was from January to June this year. Half of that was actually paid in January, and the other half was supposed to be paid at the end of June. So now Finance Minister Lim Guan Eng is saying, well, they're not going to pay him that 2.5 million ringgit anymore.
So no wonder lah, he was out there doing the ceramah rounds in the lead up to GE14. I mean, if you got a 2.5 million ringgit bonus waiting, well, pay package waiting for you at the on the other side. I mean, because there were question marks, right, about why on earth is this corporate figure, or 1MDB CEO, actually going out there being part of these political ceramahs. Well, this could be one of the incentives.
And then the question, of course, if there was a performance bonus in that package, whether he'd have to give back money to the government, because he clearly didn't do as good a job as Najib thought he would, right, considering that 1MDB is one of the main reasons why the former government lost power. Right.
And also, you know, just to tie it back into another recent story we've been talking about, you know, given the leadership void at Khazana right now, if you recall, Arul Kanda's name.
Yeah, there was speculation,
yeah,
wasn't there?
That he could have led Khazana if, once Tan Sri Azman's contract ended. No, but obviously, no. Given what happened on May 9th, the narrative has changed.
Okay, hashtag dodge that bullet. Now, now one of the other stories, that this is a perennial problem, because for a country that is a net importer of labor, the issue of Nepal, there was, of course, a recent report alleging a scam in the importation of workers, and that, you know, many workers were charged very high prices to come here and work, and that essentially what was happening was cronies in both Kathmandu and Kuala Lumpur were squeezing poor workers for all they could get.
So Bestinet, the company that's embroiled in this alleged scam involving the recruitment of Nepali workers, they've denied claims. They come out to deny claims that they had directly been involved or directly collected about 185 million ringgit from 600,000 Nepali workers bound for Malaysia. This is from September in 2013 until early this year. So they've come out to deny claims. There was a press conference yesterday, I believe, and BFM's news team attended that press conference. So we spoke to Bestinet's director, Dato' V. Radhakrishnan, and he insisted that Bestinet is only involved as a service provider for one of the four stages when it comes to the recruitment of foreign workers.
Why is Bestinet singled out? We are doing health screening. Here we take 10 fingerprints. What is the 10 fingerprints called? Biometric. So when this company came in, what are they doing? They are doing biometric security vetting. Same name. So they thought we are doing this. We categorically deny we got nothing to do with this company. Second, once they finish the health screening, this data is used by the employers in Malaysia to apply for calling visa using Bestinet system. So because the name is the same, again they say, this also disguises belongs to Bestinet. Categorically, Bestinet denies we have any relationship with these companies. They are totally not ours.
That was Bestinet's director, Dato V. Radhakrishnan. Here's the company's legal counsel, Dato N. Sivanandan, telling us about the possibility of them taking legal action against those who libel them.
We have taken some steps to identify lawyers in the respective source countries. So if the source countries don't cease from making these insinuations, we will be instructing lawyers in those relevant countries to take action. Because really some of those comments are completely unwarranted. But having said that, the human resources minister's last comment is the last comment. I think anything up to that comment, we are just willing to forgive and forget. But if after this, there are parties who still insist on publishing information which clearly is wrong, then I think the company is compelled to take legal action as the situation demands.
That was the legal counsel for Bestinet, Sundaram Berhad, Dato N. Sivanandan. Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll have the bulletin and then we'll be back with the opening numbers in the stock market. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Fuel your business drive with the Volvo S90 T8 twin engine. So cost efficient, it makes good business sense. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.